This is Jake Rosen of WFTE, and I'm sitting here with David Rosen, with whom I had the pleasure of attending 2016 Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And we're here to tell each other what we saw, because maybe even though we both looked at the same thing, we saw different things, and to discuss it, and to tell you what it was like to actually be there. Okay, Dave, we've been at this convention stuff now for a few days. In fact, it's been so hectic in the last couple of days, we didn't have a chance to do a show the other day. So I want to recapture for ourselves and for our listeners the experience of going to one of these conventions, in this particular convention. Politics aside, we'll get to the politics, but politics aside, just what the experience is like.
Well, David Rosen here. Thank you, Dad. Looking through all these photos of us, the experience was phenomenal. The best part was sneaking into the Clinton after party. Never will forget that, especially since once I snuck in, I was able to score you a ticket and get you in. That was, you know, really maybe the high point of my career.
Criminal career.
But we also snuck into everything else we tried to sneak into, including the whole convention.
No, but we had credentials. We just didn't have credentials to get where we wanted to go each time we wanted to go there.
Well, to be fair, I did want to eat the NBC News food at one point, and I'm pretty sure I could have gotten away with it, but I didn't.
Okay, how did we get to the convention? Where was it in comparison to the city?
So we would go to the convention center every day, which is misleading because that's a big, huge, three-block building.
In the
center of Philadelphia. And then there were shuttle buses from there. But we got there yesterday by car. A friend of a friend drove us. And yesterday...
Otherwise, it was a walk of about 10 blocks.
Otherwise, we took the train.
Take the train. But I walked it several times in weather that was the hottest weather in the history of Philadelphia, with the biggest humidity in the history of Philadelphia. It was a delightful walk. So I swam to the bus, and then you get on the bus. We had credentials, so that bus ride was free. That was about, 30 minutes, right?
Yes.
Then you get to stand in line to go through the kind of security that you get at the airport, except we did it three different times, right?
Right.
And then only after then do you get into air conditioning.
Right. Well, then from that, you walk to the stadium, and then you're inside. And then once you get inside, there's really a ruckus, because this is like a concert where every single person at the concert is also a musician, or it's like going to the Academy Awards if, all the actors were 65 years old and Democratic representatives.
But not all the delegates were 65 years old. There were a lot of young people.
That's true. So once you walk in, there's notables everywhere. You, of course, had friends from the communities that you've been involved with. One of the funny conversations I had, I met a woman who had a hat that said, "Make America Read Again." And she said, what do you do? She's like, "I own a bookstore. Have you heard of it? It's called The Strand." Of course, The Strand is the most famous bookstore in Manhattan. And her husband, who was with her, is the senator from Oregon. Even the nobodies were somebodies there.
Right. Then we had to push our way downstairs to get our credentials to get on the floor. And to get down there, we had to pass armies of workers. It's incredible how many people are involved in staging these conventions.
And then once you get there, you would trade in, one badge for another badge, and then you are right up there with every single news outlet,
right,
ABC,
there's Wolf
CBS.
Blitzer, you elbow him out of your way. There's Matthews, get him out of your way. There's Todd, whatever his name is.
Chuck Todd.
He's in your way.
To be fair, listening public, we never, ever, ever did pushing of Chuck Todd or Chris Matthews or Wolf Blitzer. That did not happen. And they were sitting, which was the one thing about the floor, which was, untenable after a while, which is that, you don't really want to stand. I mean, you could be there, but, other than snapping photos.
Or doing interviews.
Yeah. Right, which we did. And so, going sort of moving forward, the progression since last we spoke was that I believe, you know, the one of the big goals of this convention was to unify the Democratic Party, and you know, to from the convention floor, which may not be the best metric, but you know, and also talking to friends and seeing friends on social media, you know, I think that there was a great benefit done. So last night we saw Bill Clinton, a guy who was Obama before Obama. I mean, really, once upon
not
a time.
Not last night, 2 nights ago.
Well, 2 nights ago. Was just so good at giving speeches and gave a really great speech. You know, the love story of him and Hillary.
Right, and the audience enjoyed listening to that. And you have to understand that this is a huge arena. And
that's
every
right.
seat is filled, which is amazing. And while sometimes people talk to each other and there's a big hubbub, most of the time in this convention, people were absolutely quiet and were paying attention to the speeches, which is amazing.
In fact, Ed, I don't know if you saw this, but even the Donald himself said it was a good show.
Really?
Yes. He complimented them.
Well, it was a good show. It was a good show. They had they mixed it up. They had interesting entertainment. They had a variety of speakers from different walks of life. Some of it I felt was exploitative, like when they got all these mothers of young people who had been murdered by police or by other people, they got a round of applause for being the mothers of people who had been murdered.
There was a lot of mothers of murdered people. If it wasn't Trayvon Martin's mother, it was the mother of the Pulse nightclub killings,
yeah, yeah.
Or the mother of the Sandy Hook killings.
Right. Or it was the former congresswoman from Arizona.
Or Gabby Giffords.
Who herself was shot and who can walk with great difficulty and barely speak, but speaks with great difficulty.
Though many of my friends on the right criticized the Slate for not addressing victims of terror attacks. And while there was a police captain who lost someone in 9/11, they did not. The tilt of it was gun violence, you know, so the anti-NRA stuff, not the terror angle, which, you know, certainly the GOP has staked out, you know, as its most important talking point.
But what they were hitting was the injustice of the criminal justice system.
Right. That was what they were talking about.
Right.
Criminal justice reform.
That's right. In any case, what we were talking about before was the continent of people involved in staging this convention. CNN alone must have had 2,000 people working there. They're typing, they're plugging, they're looking at monitors.
That's true, because inside, I don't know if it was 2,000, but maybe hundreds. And they, you know, they have reporters who are writing articles, who are in one section. They have massive tents outside, each one the size of, you know, each one 10,000 square feet, literally, with trucks. I mean, the Fox News area was called the Fox News compound. So you don't call something a compound if it's just a desk with, you know, three chairs at it. I mean, you know, there was these guys were in all their glory, full force.
A lot of people.
A lot of
people.
You wonder,
what are they all doing? They're typing, they're plugging, they're tuning, they're fine-tuning, they're running equipment, they're upset, they're not upset. And in the end, why? So Wolf Blitzer can be on TV. And he's in another area altogether with 50 people surrounding him doing things. And there's Tom Brokaw coming in to talk. And there's and it was all like that. And you think to yourself, there are more people covering this convention. Well, there were 25,000 people accredited to cover the convention one way or another. And there were 5,000 people at the convention. So one of the delegates said, if each of these newsmen didn't do 5 interviews a day, he was wasting his time. So the one of the most significant impressions I got was of the numbers of people involved. On the floor, every time somebody spoke, ushers ran through the crowd ahead of time to distribute signs, which the crowd could then wave to greet that person who was speaking in an appropriate way. Well, there must have been 500 ushers doing that, running up and down and up and down and up and down. Distributing this stuff, and the stuff smelled like it had been printed exactly a minute before it was distributed. You could still smell the ink. It was fascinating, right?
Yes.
And then the food. I mean, none of it free, of course, but In fact, $5 a bottle, $4.75 for a
bottle,
bottle of water.
Right.
Right. But
stadium, you know, pricing.
Yeah. But a lot of stands where you could spend a lot of money. Two hot dogs, two cups of water, and a pretzel, $30.
Thank you for the hot dog.
Well, you can just imagine how many people were involved in that quartermaster operation. Unbelievable numbers of people.
That's right. So it was, and I think, you know, beyond the concessionary, it was top to bottom something that most people felt was a very superior event. The media regaled it as maybe in some ways a completely unique convention, best ever, one of a kind. And I think if we then look at the speakers from Bill Clinton last night, two nights ago, to last night, which was really on a whole nother level, or I think one of the press people said Monday night was better than the whole RNC. Tuesday night was better than the whole RNC. Wednesday night was better than any convention ever. And so we
really
had,
is that what news people
yeah,
are saying?
I mean, the there was a musical number with 50 stars who, you know, you'd recognize from Rosie Perez to, I think it was Savion Glover to, you know,
actors, actresses, yeah, singers, dancers. We didn't know who they were in advance. All we saw was a whole line of people come up on the stage in the semi-darkness. No, and it took a while for them to get onto the stage. And then after a very long time, and you wondered what in the world was going on, the lights went up and the TV camera went up. You saw everybody on this giant TV screen, which is the size of a barn. And you recognize them and they start singing. And they pass the mic from one hand to another. It was quite a,
yes,
a dramatic
ensemble
thing.
Musical event. And there was also maybe four music videos that, that played that were really cute and well done. Fight Song from Katy Perry, but done as a, you know, 50-person ensemble as well. And then, of course, we had the lineup of speakers. I mean, Mark Kelly, Gabby Giffords' husband, introduced Gabby Giffords, who really, really did amazing. I mean, amazing.
And then she was followed by others. There must have been some logic to the progression. Some people, I mean, there were a group of people who spoke on a common theme, gun violence. Another group of people who spoke on another common theme, social justice, and so on.
Well, you know, so let's get to the highlights of the last 2 days outside of the party. So there was Bill Clinton, who gave a great speech.
Clinton's speech was, Clinton's task was to explain to you why you should vote for his wife.
And he also did two things which were really sweet, which was address the fact, I think a big unknown in many people's lives, how it is that they are married. You know, really, seriously, this is a woman. I cheated on her. You know, why was I committed to her? And he talks about proposing to her three times and
Getting turned down twice.
Getting turned down twice. And, you know, and that was a humbling thing. And he basically said, you know, she made me the man I am. And without her, I wouldn't be here.
And he also said, and she stood by me despite everything. And everybody, of course, knew what the everything was.
Yeah. And he was really smooth, referencing every single state, which always gets a huge round of applause and all that. But then moving on from him, cause, you know, we only have so much time, you know, then we saw speakers who I enjoyed more. I mean, honestly, Bill Clinton was a novelty act, but after I saw him at the after party, and I just feel he's such an arrogant guy, is my opinion of him.
And you really did see him at the after party. I mean, we went into this fancy restaurant, somehow you got in, I won't describe how, and there he was, together with this senator and that governor and this hanger-on and that hanger-on, all told, maybe, you know, hundreds and hundreds of them, and you.
Correct. And then you. Basically, then we had the you know, the big lineup of, you know, Kane being the vice presidential nominee, and for all of his reputation as being a corporatist on the right, he didn't project that at all. He had a great backstory. Fighting for social justice. His use of Spanish was endearing. If you don't hate people who speak Spanish, which I don't. And he, you know, spoke for a while. He, I mean, I thought he gave a good talk. Then there was also...
Well, his mission was to tell you who he was. Nobody knew who he was, basically. So his mission was to tell you who he was. But he was preceded by one of the truly great old-style speakers in American political speaking styles, and that was Joe Biden, the present vice president. And the speech was preceded by a little film which told you about Joe Biden's life, and then Joe Biden comes on, and obviously this crowd liked and likes Joe Biden. And then Joe Biden spoke, and Joe Biden's speaking style is a personal conversation between you and him. And he says, you know, don't interrupt me. Now, let me get this across. And the feeling that he projects is it's basically you and him, even though it's you, him, and 30,000 other people in the hall. And he makes a talk. His talk is deliberately understated. It's about his some personal experiences of his, which he wanted to tell you about. And it turns out that these personal experiences of his encapsulate all the themes of the campaign, which somehow all of a sudden come into the discussion in a natural fashion and allows him to make his point, which points were that you can't trust Donald Trump and you can't trust Hillary Clinton, right?
That's correct. What I am... Then we led to... after the Bidens, we had Mike Bloomberg. And Mike Bloomberg really, really did a funny job, and people loved him. And it was his best speech that we ever saw him give, despite, you know, having him as the mayor of New York for 12 years. You know, it was really funny. But before that, I just want to go back to Kane. His best line was, he said, you know, the Donald has a two-word setup he uses for everything he does. Everything he does. And those two words, and you think he's going to say, you're fired. But those two words are, believe me.
But he didn't say, believe me. He said, believe me.
Yeah, he really was good at both skewering the other side, but doing it in a way that showed a deft touch.
Right. And the audience ate it up. And he went through some of Trump's most characteristic and stupidest assertions, for which he had no proof and about which he could give no rational argument. And therefore, all of which... he wanted you to believe me. That was the justification. And, of course, the crowd ate it up. Well, Bloomberg couldn't have been more different. Bloomberg started out by saying, Donald's a businessman. I understand that. I'm also a businessman. I also built my company. Of course, my father didn't give me $1 million check to get it started. I had to do that on my own. But I know something about building a business. And that's what he talked about. And he made the point that Donald Trump is not characteristic of American businessmen. Donald Trump is a rogue among American businessmen because he's basically a crook. Whereas, according to Bloomberg, American businessmen are honest. They pay their bills. They don't cheat their customers. And they don't habitually resort to bankruptcy to avoid their problems. And he said that Trump is a fraud.
And I think if you're a working-class person, it's very easy to lump all these guys together. And frankly, as a working-class person myself, you know, middle class, whatever class I'm in, I'm not in the Bloomberg class, you know, it's easy for me to lump them all together. But for someone, you know, looking in the details, for somebody to really call out Trump from his own constituency, if you will, you know, you're not talking about a pacifist calling out Obama for drone strikes. You're talking about a guy who's willing to use any tactic possible, Bloomberg, that is, to create an advantage and win. And he's saying this guy doesn't play by the rules. And not only does he not play by the rules, he's
not good at it.
He's just not good at it. Yeah, he's,
that was his point. This guy's not good at it. Yeah, he's not good at it. And he said it with a kind of a modified New York intonation.
Yeah.
Which I think made it all the more believable to people.
Yeah.
Well, so that was an interesting talk. And he starts out, he said, you know, I don't care about party. He says, I don't care about party platform. I only care about the particular candidate, and this guy is a danger. That's why I'm for his opponent. You have the feeling he would have been for any opponent.
And he said, I don't agree with Hillary Clinton on many things. He didn't say what those things were, but he said that, you know, I'm not here to write a blank check. I'm here to, you know, tell you that if you're going to hire someone to do a job, one of these people can do a job and one of them can't.
Right. Well, of course, all of that was setting the stage for what everybody was waiting for, and which was Obama. And he finally came on at about 11 o'clock at night. Frankly, I don't remember who introduced him. Oh, he was introduced by an older woman.
He was introduced by a woman who was a Blue Star mom who had lost her
Gold
son.
Gold Star
mom who had lost her son in Iraq.
Right.
And who, from Ohio, who then ran for the school board in Ohio.
Right. A grandmother.
Yeah, 73.
And who was encouraged to run by Obama, and she ran. And she loved Obama. And she told this very simple, affecting story about her life, how she got involved in social activity.
She was actually a better speaker than many of the earlier day people. She spoke with conviction and confidence and without any nerves.
That's right. And she introduced Obama.
Which was she presented Obama, which was great stagecraft.
Yeah. And then out comes Obama. And, of course, by that time, we had all been given vertical banners that read Obama, and everybody stood and waved them up and down, And Obama walked back and forth on the stage and waved. If you watch it on television, you saw him do that, but you probably didn't get a sense of the crowd. Unless you're in the crowd, you don't get a sense. You know when you go to a concert and you feel that bass pulse that comes out of the speakers.
Having been to many concerts and many sporting events, you've never ever been to something with that many people who really cared about what they were watching.
Yeah, and who were watching, who were really paying attention, and who really wanted to express their admiration, respect, and love, which is what it was for this fella, this president. He finally calmed him down, although I must say, Bernie got a bigger ovation coming out, but he got a terrific ovation, and then he started speaking. Now, I can't actually say that I heard his speech. I heard parts of his speech because he kept getting interrupted by the crowd with cheers, and then they drowned him out. My experience of his speech is of the entire event, not of the talk as talk. And it was interesting to see how this entire stadium blended with this one speaker, rising and falling with him, with his cadences, with his themes, and with the tone of his voice. It was a unique experience. You can see the significance, A, of rallies in political life, and B, of the importance of being a good public speaker.
I had the occasion to go to a corporate event, and I saw this former CEO of both Boeing and also then Ford Motor Company, I think Alan Lowy, and he had a diminutive, in a way, cadence for a CEO. You know, certainly not Arnold Schwarzenegger type or even a Donald Trump type. But then you look at these guys, Bill Clinton, Tim Kaine, Joe Biden, Barack Obama. They're so good. They're so good. They're so entrenched. I mean, these are theatrical performances that are Shakespearean almost. I mean, they...
Michelle,
absolutely, absolutely. But the theatrical pauses.
The way in which they have, each in a unique way, but they have ways of drawing the audience in, making the audience an intimate part of what it is they're talking about. You may not agree with what they're talking about. You may not even be able to tell what they did talk about later, but you have an experience of somehow uniting with them.
You might look back 8 years later and say, yeah, they promised all this stuff and they took credit for all this stuff, but did anything that they did, was any of it really effective? And if it wasn't effective, how could it be effective? I mean, they talk of this climate change treaty as if it was effective, and it was not necessarily yet effective, or the Healthcare Act. as if that was effective. And I know that in my state of New York, the insurance companies, which has an exchange, you know, are many of them going out of business, and the doctors really don't like the program. And, you know, so you you look at, you know, the unification of the country, and we don't know if the country has come to a place of greater tolerance and greater, you know, sensitivity and, you know, greater ability
for working
people.
If you don't take into account people killing each other, of course it has. But
right. If you look at the unemployment numbers, you say, well, things, but if you know anything or you know people, you can, you know that people are not saving. People are not.
Well, they talk about all the jobs that are created, but half the jobs that have been created in the recovery, half those jobs have such low wages attached to them that if you have such a job, you can't support a family on the wage you get. So the fact that there's jobs is one thing, but the fact that it's a completely inadequate wage is the overriding thing, because if you have such a job, there's no recovery for you.
And then even going back to, you know, the after party night, not last night, but the night before last, when after we were at, with the Clintons, I went to the Ritz-Carlton to close it down at the end. And
the Ritz-Carlton is where Obama
is. Where everyone is.
With the people who count, you and me. That's.
I bought a man who said he'd been a senator. I Googled him later. He didn't seem like he had been a senator. But I bought
him.
He was
a state senator. He wasn't the U.S. senator.
Maybe, yeah. And, you know, two drinks were $80. So there you go.
Right.
But that was my whole entertainment budget. So, hey, it wasn't that bad. But, yeah. But, like, you know, there, these people are such elites. I mean, there's nothing about them that it bridges the gap. That's on the surface that you can tell. I mean,
right. And that the kind of thing I want to talk about in our next blog episode, because we've had a lot of conversations with delegates, a lot of Bernie delegates, especially, and their take on the convention. Now we're going to get into the politics and not just the atmospherics. Their take on the convention, I don't think has been reported. I haven't seen it reported anywhere, and it's very interesting. And of course, since the point of this convention was to unify that wing of the Democratic Party with the Clinton wing, or if not to unify it, at least to somehow subordinate it so that they collaborate with the Clinton wing, I think it's interesting for us to discuss what we learned.
So I think, you know, in talking to a California Bernie delegate who's 7 years younger than us, you know, and what we'll look to have her on the show, I think, next time, you know, she was talking about the generational differences and how people of my age, mid-30s, really unrepresented in that movement, in her opinion. And she was talking about her siblings. And you know, these are themes we'll look at, you know, going forward. Because, you know, that's the problem with Hillary. She does not, for, you know, style or substance, present an image where you know, the base of any country, have you, believes with all of the intonation, rhetoric, you know, with Joe Biden saying, you know, on CNN that we've got to let the Bernie people mourn, and with Barack Obama saying all sorts of great platitudes about Bernie Sanders,
which he did.
But with all that, you still got the feeling they didn't care.
Well, you know, and when you talk to the delegates, forget what the people on the stage said. When you talk to the delegates, I didn't hear anybody make any case for why you should vote for Hillary, except that you needed to vote against Trump. So more about this in our next installment tomorrow.